Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We are about to start the new chapter. We are starting Perek Sheni, the second chapter of Moed Katan. It is found at the very top of Yud Aleph Amud Bet. That's 11b. So having concluded the first chapter dealt with a number of limitations on the kinds of activities that you can do on Chol HaMoed, on the intermediate days of the festival. And primarily we talked about a few different categories of activity. The first part of the chapter dealt with agricultural work, such as irrigating fields, killing pests, and other things like that. And then we talked about marriage and death, whether or not you're allowed to get married during Chol HaMoed, which you're not supposed to do, and about burying people and reburying them. And then at the end, we talked about one's domicile, like fixing your roof or the wall around your field or your door if it's broken, and all of the possible limitations when you are allowed to do that labor and when you're not allowed to do that labor on Chol HaMoed. Now, our second chapter basically continues along the same themes, but instead of talking about the fields and the burial plots and the houses, we're going to talk about the produce. What happens with your olives, what happens with your wine, and your produce that's in the fields. That's the basic material for our second chapter. And it's following similar issues related to Chol HaMoed, which is, if you don't do this on Chol HaMoed, will there be a loss? If there's going to be a loss, and it's a serious loss, then you can do that activity on Chol HaMoed, assuming that it isn't too much effort, that it isn't too difficult a procedure to do. Could you have done it before the Moed? If you could have done it before the Moed, and you just waited until the Moed, then we don't want you to do it, because you should have done it beforehand. The other question that we're going to deal with, which is the first question here, is, which we started talking about at the very end of the last chapter as well, is even if you do it, even if you're allowed to do the labor, are you allowed to do it fully? Or do you have to only do part of the labor? Or perhaps you have to do it with a shinui, a change? So those are the topics for discussion. We begin with the topic of olives. I'm not an olive farmer, but I did a little basic research on how olives are harvested. And after you harvest the olives, basically you stack them up for a while in your field, and the sun beats down on them, and they are hard when you pick them. But after a while, when you stack them, they start to get soft and mushy. Now, once they get really soft and mushy, that's when you want to squeeze them out to get the olive oil. So what you have to do is do two stages. There's three stages. The first stage is you leave them out in the field and let them get soft and mushy. Then they get like softer and mushier on one side. So what you have to do is flip them over. Once you flip them over, they get soft and mushy on the other side. Then you put them in an olive press, and you take a heavy beam of wood, and you push the heavy beam of wood down on top of the olives, and that pushes out the finer, more virgin olive oil from them. After that, you take the olives and you sort of grind them up, then you stack them back up, and you put the beam on them a second time, and you get the second crop of olives, of olive oil. So what we're talking about here in our Mishnah is someone who has already flipped his olives over. Because once you flip the olives over, they are ready for pressing. And if you don't press them, they will spoil. There is an argument to be made that if you haven't flipped them over, that you should be able to wait until after the festival to flip them over, just let them get a little softer. Rambam does not paskin that way. Rambam paskins that you are allowed to flip the olives over on Chol HaMoed, because if you don't, they could also spoil and cause a loss. But it seems like all the other Rishonim disagree and believe that the olives can be left if you haven't flipped them over yet. So the question is whether or not this is a question in Mitziut, like is it just a factual question of whether or not the olives will spoil or not, or is it a question about what constitutes a loss? Because maybe if you do leave the olives and you don't flip them over, the olive oil won't be quite as good, and you could argue then about whether or not that constitutes a loss or just a loss of profit. However, generally speaking, what our Mishnah says, and it begins at the very top of Yud Aleph Amud Bet, we'll begin to read it. Mi shehafach et zeitav, someone who has already flipped over his olives. Now, once he's flipped over his olives, we are going to say that if he doesn't press them, he's going to experience a loss. Now, the idea here is that he meant to press them before the holiday, but he was unable to for various reasons, and the Mishnah is going to give us a few reasons. So, mi shehafach et zeitav, a person already flipped his olives, v'iru evel, and then he became a mourner. Let's come back to that case in a second. O ones, or something out of his control happened that prevented him from continuing to press his olives. O shehit uhu poalim, or his workers hoodwinked him, meaning they said, the contractor said they were going to show up and press the olives the day before Yontif, and they didn't show up. If you can imagine, I mean, this happens with contractors all the time. So the workers said they would come press the olives, and then they didn't show up. And then, lo and behold, it was Yontif. So under that situation, to'ein kora rishona, he can take the kora, which is the heavy beam, and he can load it onto the olives, rishona, the first pressing of the olives, umanicha la'achar ha-moed, tivrei Rabbi Yehuda, and then he leaves it until after the moed. And that is the words of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, if he's already flipped the olives over, he can press them once, but he cannot press them the second time. Ordinarily, he would press them the second time as well. He would grind up the olives and then press them a second time. That he's not allowed to do on the moed. We're going to consider that to be a profiting activity. You're doing that to increase your profits, not to forestall a loss. But pressing down on it the first time is considered forestalling a loss, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore you can do it. There is a question about this first case, which is Iru Evel. He becomes a mourner. So it's unclear as to whether or not this refers to that he became a mourner right before the holiday, and that's why he wasn't able to press his olives. So in other words, he flipped his olives, and then a member of his family died, Rahmana Litzlan, and he was unable to complete the process because he was handling the burial, and he was in mourning, so he was unable to press his olives. Or, and this is the way Rashi reads it, are we just saying this is an entirely different case? He became a mourner sometime during the year. On some level, the laws of mourning and the laws of Chol HaMoed track each other. You're not supposed to do the same kinds of labor when you are a mourner as you are not supposed to do on the intermediate days of the festival. So perhaps we're creating a comparison between the two, and the Gemara is going to discuss that at further length. According to one version of the Gemara, as we'll see in a minute, it seems like Rashi's version makes more sense, that we're just talking about Avilut in general. And according to another version of the Gemara, it's possible that we're specifically referring to a situation where his mourning prevented him from doing the labor before the festival started. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda says that he can do the first pressing. However, we have a second opinion in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Zolef, he can cause the olive oil to flow, the gomer, and he can complete the process, the gaf kedarko, and he can even put it into a barrel, and laguf means to plug the barrel, which is the final process of getting the olive oil ready for storage. Rashi does not go race this. He does not include this last section of the gaf kedarko because apparently it seems that olive oil does not require to be closed up immediately. It won't spoil immediately. And since it won't spoil immediately, he should really leave it until after the festival to plug up the barrel. However, Tosfos suggests perhaps it's because you don't want mosquitoes or bugs to fall into the oil, so you have to plug it up just so that it, or at least cover it. But the basic opinion of Rabbi Yossi is that once you have a situation of loss, you're able to complete the process. So since we are saying that you're allowed to press the olives once, you can also do the second pressing. You can complete the process. Once you're allowed to do it, you're allowed to do it. And we paskin generally like Rabbi Yossi. There is one other question related to this, which is the main machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, which we saw at the end of the last chapter, and we'll see it again on this chapter as well, is whether or not you need to do a shinui. So there are two different ways to approach the question of shinui, of doing a change, so that you don't do it in the regular way. One way of doing it is that you're allowed to do the activity, but you're not allowed to complete it. And that's how we've been understanding it. Rabbi Yehuda says you can press the olives the first time, but in order to remember that it's the festival, you don't press it the second time. Now, Rashi portrays this as a question of loss, meaning you shouldn't press him the second time because that's not really a loss. That's profit. The Tosfos HaRash does it differently, and I think this one makes more sense, which is what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that this is how you do a shinui. You press it once because you don't want to have a loss, but the second time, by not completing the process, you show that you're doing a shinui. The other way of possibly reading it is that even when you load the first beam, Rabbi Yehuda would require a shinui. In other words, there's a way of loading a beam onto the olive so that it presses the olives, and you do it in a certain way, but there may be a way to do that with a shinui. Just like there's usually a way to, like when my wife was having a baby on Friday night, we had to call a taxi to take us to the hospital when she was in labor. So you pick up the phone and you dial it with your finger. So instead of doing that, you can do it with a shinui. You dial the phone with a spoon. So there's an ordinary way of doing something, and there's a way of doing it with a shinui. So here too, we could argue that Rabbi Yehuda requires you to load the beam with a shinui. So there's two different ways of looking at what the possible shinui is. One other thing, which I'm interested in, and I did not see it anywhere in the Rishonim, but I didn't look everywhere, is whether or not there's an issue of tircha here as well. We might argue that loading the beam the first time to press the olives when they are soft and full of juice is not a great amount of tircha. However, then to then grind them up and to press them a second time to get out all the rest of the oil, perhaps that's very labor intensive and maybe it's an issue of tircha. But I am just surmising that as a possibility. I did not see it anywhere. Okay, that takes us through the Mishnah. So we have a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can press the olives once, and Rabbi Yossi, who says you can complete the process, press them as many times as you need to, and finish getting all the olive oil out. Now we go to the Gemara. Four lines down from the top. Patach be'eval, v'siyem b'moed. The Gemara is asking a question. It begins with mourning, and it completes with the festival. As we saw, the first case is a person who flipped over his olives, and then he became a mourner. So it makes sense if the mourning is just a case like all the other cases. In other words, he flipped over his olives, and then he became a mourner, so he wasn't able to press them. Or some other onus, something out of his control, prevented him from flipping them. Or his workers fail to show up. All of these are sub-cases. So that would make sense. We're not really dealing specifically with the laws of Avilut, with the laws of mourning. What we're talking about here are the laws of the festival, and we're saying there's a reason why he wasn't able to press his olives before the moed. However, if what we're going to say is that the reason he can't press his olives when he becomes a mourner is because a mourner is not allowed to do malacha, a mourner is not allowed to do labor, so then the Mishnah never really discusses mourning. All it says is moed. It says, toein kora rishona, he can put the first beam on, and then leave it until after the moed. It never says, l'achar hamoed, u'l'achar evlo, and after his mourning. It just mentions the festival. So this is the Gemara's question. What happened to the Avilut? It never said anything about the Avilut. The end of the Mishnah only talks about the festival. So we have two ways of looking at this, and they are diametrically opposed. Amar Rav Shisha Breder Rav Idi. Rav Shisha Breder Rav Idi says, Zotomeret, this is to say, Dvarim Hamutarim Bimoed, those things that are permitted on the festival, that is, in this case, doing the first pressing of the olives, asurim bime evlo, they are forbidden when one is a mourner. In other words, the reason why the Mishnah only mentions the lenient opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi that allow him to press his olives during Chol HaMoed is because you're allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. However, when you are an avel during your period of Shiva, you are not allowed to do any labor. You wouldn't even be able to put the first beam on the olives. Rav Ashi disagrees with Rav Shisha, and he says, Lo mi baya ka amar. No, you have to read it the opposite way. It's a form of reading the Mishnah, which is a lo mi baya. So he's going to explain how you read it, lo mi baya. Lo mi baya bimei evlo. It's not sufficient that during his days of mourning, d'midrabanan hu v'sharei, which is only rabbinic, the sitting of Shiva is only rabbinic. One could argue only maybe that the first day of mourning is required from the Torah, but the sitting of the Shiva is really a rabbinic institution, and therefore it's permitted for him to do work on those days. Ella, but rather, afilu b'moed, even on the festival, d'isra malachim idoraisa, where you're forbidden to do work on a Torah level, b'makom pseida sharu rabbanan. In a case of loss, the rabbis permitted it here. So this is kind of an inverse kal v'chomer. We're saying, if it's true that the rabbis permitted you to do work on Chol HaMoed in a case of loss, here where if you leave your olives, they're going to spoil. So, and that is a Isser Malacha Midoraita, you're forbidden to do work on Chol HaMoed from the Torah. Then, of course, kal v'chomer, you could do it when you were just an avel, where the problem of working is only midrabanan, it's only rabbinic. So it's kind of a backwards kal v'chomer, and so he reads it as a lo mibaya. Lo mibaya, it's not just sufficient that you can do it when you're an avel, but once you know that you can do it when it's chol hamoed, for sure you know you can do it when you're an avel. Now, he is making a certain assumption here, which was a machloket that we had in the beginning of the tractate about whether or not the isur of doing malacha on Chol HaMoed is from the Torah or not. The Torah doesn't specify clearly whether or not you're allowed to do malacha on Chol HaMoed or not. So there is the main opinion is that it is that malacha is forbidden, but the exact definition of what constitutes malacha and when it can be done was given to the sages. But there is another opinion that, in fact, it's not clear that malacha is forbidden by the Torah at all on Chol HaMoed, but the rabbis did not want the intermediate days of the festival to be treated like weekdays, and so therefore they instituted specific restrictions on work. And if you argue that way, this Gemara seems to go against that. If you would argue that way, then you would not have this kal v'chomer or this lo mibaya. In any case, we have these two opinions. Both these opinions seem to indicate that the issue related to avilut is the avilut itself, which seems to accord with the idea of Rashi, that what we're talking about here is a person who became a mourner at any time during the year. We're not specifically talking about becoming a mourner right before the holiday, but that we're comparing the laws of mourning to the laws of Chol HaMoed. However, you could argue that the main reason why we're talking about it is because if he was allowed to do this work when he was a mourner right before the festival, then if he didn't do it, why would he then have the right to do it on the festival? Whereas if he is an avel right before the festival who's allowed to press his olives, then he's not allowed to press his olives, then that would be a good enough reason to explain why he's allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. So the Ravid has a problem with this. He says, if it's true that he became a mourner right before the festival, this is just an example of ones. So it's already covered. It says in the Mishnah that he became an avel, or it was a case of ones. But if he becomes an avel and he's not able to do his work, that's a case of ones. I'm not sure I accept this argument only because the next example is that his workers misled him and didn't show up, and that's also a case of ones. So it's not clear if we can limit ones to every possible case of ones. Okay, let's continue on. We are going to bring a support for one of the two opinions. Tanya kavati derav Shisha b'rei derav Idi. We're going to bring a braita that is in accordance with the opinion of Shisha b'rei derav Idi, which is that a mourner is not allowed to do any malacha, even the malacha that's allowed on Chol HaMoed, a mourner during Shiva is not allowed to do. And here's how we learn it. Elu dvarim, these are the things, ha'osin le'avel b'mei evlo, that are done for a mourner on the days of his mourning. So the basic idea here is that there is a leniency that even though a mourner is not allowed to do malacha during his mourning period, he is allowed to have other people do it on his behalf. But what we're going to learn from this is that since he has to get other people to do it on his behalf, that means he's not allowed to do it himself. So the Mishnah here is saying the Bala Bayis himself is allowed to press his olives, but during Chol HaMoed. But if he's an Avel, he's not allowed to do it. What he might be allowed to do is have someone else do it for him. That's exactly what we're going to say. Zeitav hafuchin, if his olives are already flipped over so that they got soft, Toanin lo, then you can put the beam on them to press out the juice. V'chado laguf, and you can, if the olive oil is already in its cod, it's in its barrel, you can stop up the barrel. U'pishtano lahalot mina mishra, if he has flax that is soaking in a tub, so you had to soak the flax before you worked with it, but if you left it in the water for too long, it would spoil. So he could have someone take his flax out of the tub. V'tzimro lahalot min hayora, and he can take his wool out of the vat. The yora was the dyeing vat, so you can't leave the wool in the dyeing vat for too long. You have to be able to take it out, so someone could take it out for him. U'marbitzin sadehu, and he can water his field. Marbitzin, we've seen this a few times. It seems like marbitzin is a light kind of watering. It's not a full irrigation. It's like some kind of like sprinkling water on the field. Mishitagia onatamayim, when it is his scheduled day to give it water. So if he's supposed to give it water, let's say once a week, and that happens during the time of his mourning, he can have someone else water it for him. So that is the opinion of the Tanakhama, that all of these things can be done on behalf of a mourner, but not by a mourner himself. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Af zor in los denir. Rabbi Yehuda adds an additional kulas here, additional leniencies. He says you can also plant a plowed field. So it's a field that that's all ready for planting. It just hasn't been planted yet. So if all the furrows are plowed and everything's ready to go, then on behalf of the mourner, you can put the seeds in, because you have to be very conscious of the time. If it's a time for planting, you have to do it, otherwise it's too late. V'sadeha omedet lapishtan, and you can also plant a field that is ready for flax, which is also very time sensitive, has to be planted right at the beginning of the winter. So Rabbi Yehuda allows you to do that on behalf of a mourner as well. Amrulo, the sages responded to Rabbi Yehuda, and they disagreed with him. Imlo tizara bebachir, if you don't plant it in the early crop, tizara be'efel, then you can plant it in the later crop. In other words, it's not so time sensitive. You can wait a week, and there is enough crop rotation, enough crop delay that you plant in different stages that you can just plant it in one later stage. Imlo tizara pishtan, then if you don't plant it with the flax, you can plant it with another thing. So maybe it is so time specific for flax, but if you don't plant flax in this field, you can still plant something else in this field. So that's not the same thing. It's not the same kind of loss. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, Zeitav hafuchim, if his olives are flipped over already so that they're soft and ready for pressing, ve'ein sham uman elahu, and there is no one with the skill who knows how to press olives except for him. Kado laguf, he has to seal up his barrel of olives, or probably kado laguf probably is referring to wine. Our next Mishnah talks about wine, and wine, if you don't seal it up, it will spoil. So it could be that here he's not talking about olive oil, he's talking about wine. Kado laguf, he has to seal up his barrel, ve'ein sham uman elahu, and there is nobody who's an expert in doing it. I guess there's a specific way that you have to put a hole in the barrel and plug it up so that it's properly sealed. So there's no one who has the expertise to do it except for him. Pishtano la'alot mina mishra, he has to take the flax out of the tub. V'tzimro la'alot mina yora, and he has to take the wool out of the vat. V'ein sham uman hu elahu, and there's nobody who knows how to do it except for him. Harize yaseh, he then, the mourner himself is allowed to do it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is giving a big leniency. The mourner is allowed to do it, but he has to do it bitsinna. He has to do it privately. Meaning the basic halacha is that he's not allowed to do it. So we don't want him to do it publicly, and then people will think that you can do this when you're an avel, but if it's going to be a loss and there's no one else that can do it for him, then in a private way he's allowed to do it. That is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's kula, his leniency. And then we have one other leniency, yeter al kein, all them even more so, furthermore. Amar Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel gives another leniency. Im haya uman larabim, if he is a professional who is in a public capacity. So it gives an example. Visapar, he is the town barber. Ubalan, or he's the town bath attendant. Larabim, for the masses, for the public. Viyegia eta regel, and it's about to be the festival time. Ve'ein sham uman elhu, and there is no other professional except for him. Harize yase, then he can do it. So this goes back to the situation where he is an avel right before the festival, but everybody else in town wants to get a haircut or take a bath or have uman work, you know, specific kinds of professional work done right before the festival. So that's, we support that. We want people to get their work done before the festival so they don't have to do work on the festival, but he's the only guy that knows how to do it. In the meantime, he is an avel, so he's not really supposed to do the work, but if he doesn't do it, he's going to let down his whole town. So in that situation, he is allowed to do it himself. Apparently, even not bitsina, he can do it even in public. That's why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says yeter al kein, even more. There is one situation where he can do the work in public. There's one situation where he can do it in private, where it's his own work. And generally speaking, he's not supposed to do it at all. Okay, we'll stop there and we'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.